twist on your death. I have my doubts about it.
Welcome back. I'm Ian Masterson. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Elise Foley, a reporter for The Huffington Post based in Washington, D.C. Previously, she worked for The Washington Independent, and currently she's in Iowa covering the caucuses. Welcome to Background Briefing, Elise Foley.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And obviously, it's a very busy day for you, and you've been covering some of the candidates as they reach out to the youth vote, I guess with mixed results. The 76-year-old Ron Paul trying to be hip referenced Kelly Clarkson, but there seems to be some real appeal for him amongst the young. Is that what you're picking up?
Yes, definitely. So this morning, there was an event at a high school. Michelle Bachmann, Mitt Romney, Rick Santorum, and Ron Paul all spoke. And I was chatting with a bunch of the high school students after, and not a single one liked any of the other candidates besides Ron Paul. I think that he really has this ability to appeal to young people that you don't see as much with some of the other Republican candidates. If you go to a Ron Paul event, you often see far more young people than you do at these other events.
And what was the objections that most of the young people had towards the others, and Bachmann and Santorum in particular?
Well, Santorum, as you know, is a very, very focused social conservative. He is very focused on things like gay marriage and abortion and promoting traditional marriage. For a lot of people, especially younger people who are more likely to support gay marriage, that's a really big issue. Him sort of what they see as bashing gay people when, you know, they know gay people, they have friends or relatives who are gay, that's a big problem for a lot of them. And that's something that a lot of people cited to me as a problem with Santorum.
So he's crashing into the millennials, right? Because they're, in many ways, I have a millennial daughter, and her friends are all post-sexual and post-racial, and it's only baby boomers that are still hung up on this kind of stuff.
That's right. When you look at millennials in general, maybe they still have conservative values about economic policy and things like that. Many, many do. But in terms of social issues, a lot of them are just much more liberal than their parents and don't see it as the government's role to get involved in, you know, saying what's okay for someone to do, either with their body or who they can marry, things like that.
So Elise Foley, again, reporter with the Huffington Post, based in Washington, D.C. Previously, she worked for the Washington Independent, and she's currently in Iowa covering the caucuses. My understanding, Elise, is that essentially, even though they're not open primaries or open caucuses, pretty much anybody can vote. All you have to do is sign a piece of paper saying you want to vote as a Republican, and then you can rescind it later. So it's conceivable that a lot of young libertarians and young anti-war Democrats and even the Occupy movement people, could they not show up and vote for Ron Paul?
That's absolutely right. In fact, it's something that Paul's supporters will emphasize in the meetings. They'll often stand up at the end of his appearances and say, just remember, you can always go to the door and register as a Republican, whatever you've been before. So you do meet a lot of Ron Paul supporters who voted for Obama or, you know, supported Hillary Clinton last time around. So there's definitely the opportunity to do that. And I mean, one thing that's a little funny, some people are participating because they have to. I spoke to some high school students today, and they said that they had to participate in the caucuses because it was for a grade. So I thought that that was kind of funny. Not everybody is there because they actually want to help pick the next presidential nominee.
So what's your sense then of yesterday? It was a tie amongst Santorum, Paul, and Romney. Now we're told that Romney's likely to break out. He's already announced himself the winner, but Gingrich did that earlier too, right?
That's right.
Give us your read on where it might be heading. I know we're getting down to the wire now.
Right. I haven't covered Romney as much as some of the other candidates, but just speaking to my colleagues, it sounds like the enthusiasm for Romney is really going up. I think that people like to get behind someone they think can win. Electability is very important to people. no matter who they support, people really want to get Barack Obama out of office. They really want someone, anyone, to win against him. And so I think as Romney seems to become more popular, that leads to more and more popularity, more enthusiasm for him. In terms of Santorum, you're seeing the same thing. You're seeing, and he mentions this in his speeches, you're seeing people who previously thought, I would support him, but I don't know if he can win. You're seeing those people fully going on board.
And this is a candidate who lost his Senate seat in Pennsylvania by a fairly sound margin. So it's a strange idea that he could suddenly be a viable presidential candidate.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because he often really talks up the fact that he is electable because he won in Pennsylvania in the previous, you know, his previous elections and re-elections. And so
he doesn't mention that he was recently defeated.
He doesn't mention that he lost in 2006, right? So he'll say, you know, Pennsylvania has a lot of Democrats. The district I was in when I was in Congress had, a majority Democrats, and I still won, and I still was reelected. But you're right, he does not mention the 2006 loss.
But he got a big boost, didn't he, from one of the most prominent Christian conservatives in the state. And isn't that the theory that in 2008, the Christian conservatives comprised 60% of the Republican caucus vote? And if they coalesce around a candidate, not split their vote between Santorum, Bachman, and Perry, he's likely to be a contender.
That's right. He did get that endorsement from Bob Vanderplaats of the Family Leader, I believe, and I think that matters to people. They respect Vanderplaats, and they want to see someone that, you know, if he thinks that Santorum is good, that means something to them. More and more, I think, like I mentioned before, since Santorum is growing his support, I think that some people who like Bachman, like Perry, are sort of saying, well, maybe we should support Santorum just for that reason of not wanting to split the vote. So I think that that's something that might have an effect tonight.
So, Elise Foley, it's extraordinary, though, how they've all gone up and then gone down one after the other. And we're barely mentioning Gingrich. A week ago, he was on the tip of everybody's tongue.
That's right. And just being on the ground here, you kind of see very few people mention Gingrich. Granted, I, haven't been covering him as much as the other candidates, so I'm not meeting his very strong supporters, but for the most part, a lot of people I speak to, at Events for Everyone are very skeptical of Gingrich. They are really repeating this line that is being put out by the Romney-supporting super PAC, Restore Our Future. They're putting out these ads saying that Gingrich has a lot of baggage. You hear Iowans just repeating that exact line back to you all the time. So I think that things like these attack ads are really catching on with Iowa voters.
So negative television ads work, and I guess he's got considerable money behind him, hasn't he, in the super PAC. Have you noticed how saturated the airwaves are, Elise?
Yes, absolutely. You cannot watch network TV without seeing constant ads, whether they be for or against a candidate. They're just playing all the time. So it's hard to escape it. And the other thing that's happening is the robocalls and the personal calls from campaigns are happening constantly. I was actually just speaking to someone who said that he cannot wait for this to be over because he's so sick of getting phone calls, and that his friend had said that he got 95 calls yesterday. Obviously an exaggeration, but people are, getting these, hearing these, and some people are going to be swayed by them, even if just a little. If they have some doubts, they might, be swayed by these robocalls and these ads.
Again, I'm speaking with Elise Foley, reporter for The Huffington Post, based in Washington, D.C. Previously, she worked for The Washington Independent, and she's currently in Iowa covering the caucuses. My understanding, Elise, is that a rough figure per vote now, in other words, how much money is being spent by these candidates to get a vote, although I guess in a caucus is not exactly a vote so much, but the long and the short of it is it's up to about $250 per vote. Is that what you understand?
I believe so. It's interesting to watch because the approaches are so different. Some people are spending so much more money than others. And so it's interesting to watch what that means. I think it'll say a lot about how Iowa caucuses will go in the future. to see how, say, Rick Santorum, who's not spending that high amount of money, versus Mitt Romney or the others who are spending a lot of money, it'll be interesting to see what wins out, because it'll say, you know, what the right strategy is in Iowa going forward.
Mm-hmm. But we started out talking about Ron Paul, and he could be the surprise, right? Because you can't really quantify his support in as much as he's had. He's had what they call the best ground game. Is that what you understand?
Well, yes, he is extremely organized. He has a lot of people, you know, signed up to be caucus captains, which are the people who go to the caucuses and they speak on behalf of the candidate. And a lot of people go into these undecided, so they might, you know, be convinced by one of these people. So it's important that Paul has that. And yes, his ground game is good. He has a lot of support in local places. So it's true. He has a good shot at this.
Yeah. Well, what I was trying to figure out is what's going to be the surprise, given that this has been covered to death and polled to death and predicted to death and pundited to death, if that's a word. What's your sense of what hasn't been told so far or what could be a surprise?
Well, I think in terms of the final results, what could be a surprise, I mean, I sort of alluded to this before, but a lot of people were saying that Iowa, now that, you know, you do have things like ads, you have robocalls, isn't as much about going out, meeting people, doing all that work anymore. But you have candidates like Rick Santorum who really take it as a point of pride that they've visited everywhere in Iowa. So I think this will be a very strong test of that theory, and I think that that could be surprising what the result turns out to be. The other thing that I think could be surprising is if Romney is able to clinch the win here, I think that says a lot about whether he'll get the eventual nomination, because the person who wins in Iowa doesn't necessarily get it. But that means that in Iowa, people were willing to look past some of their doubts about him, and people do have doubts. So I think that could be a surprising and important thing to happen tonight.
So what is it, the general feeling, though? You talked about the young voters, and they were turned off by Santorum and Bachman's anti-gay stance and attracted to Ron Paul. But there's also been the presence of the Occupy movement there, in the Renaissance Hotel in Des Moines. And the message from that movement has been a plague on both their houses, both Democrats and Republicans. And I think in the broader national picture, I don't think it's a reach to say that there's a lot of disgust with the Congress. Its approval has been down to 9%. So I'm trying to get a sense here of this disconnect between what it seems to me a broad national kind of disgust with politics and politicians, mm-hmm. and in a sense that there's too much money and it's too corrupt on the one hand, and yet so much media attention is being paid to Iowa. So just as we're kind of turned off by politics and there's a sense of disgust, you know, the opposite's happening in terms of the media. It's almost that they're celebrating democracy rather than being turned off by it.
I mean, I think you make a really interesting point. I think that that's not necessarily the full reason why there are so many media out here, but there is this fascination with this campaign, maybe more so than some others, although I think in 08, especially the Democrats had a very interesting race here as well. I think part of it is also that people really want to see someone that's a leader. They don't like, as you said, they don't like this partisan gridlock in Congress. They're sick of Congress that can't get anything done, that's, like you said, so tied up with money. So a lot of the Republicans have a message about that. So I think that might be why this is seeming so important right now.
So, but when you say a lot of Republicans have the message about it, they've also been the object of a lot of the complaints about gridlock, particularly, you know, the Tea Party holding up the entire government over and threatening the full faith and credit of the United States, and more recently over the payroll tax cut increase. So there's a perception, I think, that the Republicans have actually been pretty obstructionist about creating gridlock. Yet there you're seeing in Iowa candidates campaigning successfully as being against big money in politics?
Yes, absolutely. You hear from a lot of the candidates that they want to, you know, end corruption and things like that. They don't want all this influence. At the same time, absolutely. I mean, the Tea Party has been very bent on obstructing these certain things. I think, though, the general sense that I get from a lot of Republicans is that they're obstructing the good things, or the things that should be obstructed. So they don't mind that. They just don't like when the Democrats block things that they want. They, you know, a lot of people, more so than I would have thought, are very frustrated with the Keystone Pipeline, which is sort of an obscure issue for so many people to care about, but a lot of them, you know, are very upset about the Democrats on that. So I think more the message that the Republican candidates have been making is elect me, but also get the Senate back to being Republican controlled, get a bigger majority in the House. And so that's sort of their solution for ending partisan gridlock, not exactly working better together.
So in other words, the Keystone Pipeline, which was attached to the payroll tax cut legislation, that actually worked as a wedge issue for Republican voters?
You hear people bring it up as an issue, which I mean, as I said, I find somewhat surprising, just given that it doesn't seem like something that would gain a lot of traction, but they mention it when they talk about energy, the candidates do, and the voters seem to really pick up on it. It's not the most important issue to people, but when they, you know, if you ask them about why they like someone's energy policy, that's something that they'll cite.
Wow. So they're basically saying that they've said it'll provide jobs and energy, and the Democrats are against jobs and energy.
That's exactly right.
Wow. Well, that's surprising. So I know things are about to come to a crunch now, and you have to leave us, Elise, but any inside tips on what you think is going to happen, or you just know as much as anybody else, right?
You know, as you mentioned before, there are a lot of pundits making a lot of predictions. I honestly don't know. I think it's between Romney, Paul, and Santorum, but that's about as far as I'm able to go. I think there's a lot of enthusiasm for all of them, and it'll be interesting to see how it turns out.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate it. Again, I've been speaking with Elise Foley, who's a reporter for the Huffington Post based in Washington, D.C., and she's currently in Iowa covering the caucuses. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the author of the book, Why Iowa.
Some side with the leaves, some side. You and I will be undefeated by greed.